So our scripture for this morning is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. And I'll be reading from the New Revised Standard Version. And it simply reads as so. It says, "Now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. Just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. And when Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, 'Woman, you are set free from your ailment.' And when he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God." But the leader of the synagogue, because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on these days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites. Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, daughter of Abraham, who Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on this Sabbath day?" And when he said all this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things he was doing. But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites. For a few minutes in this time that we have this share together, I want to use this title for my message. I'm tired of this church. I'm tired of this church. A few months ago, my personal DMs were buzzing with messages from multiple people sharing a viral church video, asking me, had I seen this viral? And really, I just wanted to tell them yes, because whenever there's a church-related video, all of my friends tend to send it to me, and they all tend to do it at the same time. But in this particular video, it was a video of a little boy, and some of you may have seen a little boy who looked to have been rehearsing for a church play. You remember church plays, don't you? Christmas plays, Easter plays, Mother's Day, where we had to do plays for Mother's Day breakfast, and all of these different plays that we had to do as we had matriculated through the church experience. In these moments, you are given an assigned line, and you would go home and you would practice that line ad nauseum until you were able to memorize it, to say it in front of the congregation. Well, as this little boy walked up and grabbed the mic to share his line, he went a little bit off script. And he shared a line to the astonishment of everyone there, saying, "I'm tired of this church." And he dropped the mic and walked off. And you could just hear people in the back, "Oh my gosh, did he just say that?" And I share that with you not simply because it was humorous, but because in that moment, you can see the resonation in that young boy's face and sense that what he was saying was sincere. That he, in fact, had reached a serious place of fatigue with the church. A fatigue that some of you may not be able to be honest enough in this moment to admit it because we're in church. But I can testify for you and say that I have definitely reached that point. Because while not having the unmitigated gall to vocally express it in a church setting, I've many times left out of the church expressing this same sentiment. I'm tired of this church. So much so that there are days when I just want to hang my robe up in the rafters and say goodbye to congregational ministry. And this is a conversation that my good brother, Reverend Elijah, and I struggle through together frequently. You know I just couldn't be guilty alone. But we wrestle mightily with the direction of the church at times. Often asking the question, how do we negotiate the tension of being tired of the place that God has called us to? Called us to do our work. But what I've realized is that this is not a tension that we need to quickly absolve, because it is a struggle with the church that is not rooted in inherent dislike or hate, but just the opposite. A struggle that comes out of an immense love for the church. a love that leaves us so disappointed because we see the best of what the church can be. We see so much that this faith has to offer, but then we see often how it falls so short, how off-centered we can be. We see the church missing the mark. We see the church being sinful. We see it in practices that are openly oppressing and dehumanizing difference. We see it when instead of constructing spaces of love because of the commonalities of souls, we ostracize because of human uniqueness. We see it hang signs of exclusivity on their doors under the guise of dangerous doctrine. So while we love this church and we know what this church could be, we still see it for what it is at times. And as a result of the church space's irreverent irresponsibility, every once in a while, one must declare, you and I must declare, that we too are tired of this church. I'm tired of how we represent God, or really how we represent God via our ecclesiastical structures. There has to be, I would argue, a healthy sense of fatigue with some of the way our churches are presently constructed. And I believe this narrative that we are encountering this morning is essentially a commentary on confronting the normative infrastructures found in our churches rather than conforming to the infrastructure. Jesus, to the dismay of the surrounding church leaders, heals a woman on the Sabbath. Confrontational act, a healing that went against the traditional customary practices of the synagogue, because the law suggested that one could not work on the synagogue and healing was considered work. But the reason I make this claim that Jesus was confrontational is because Jesus was well versed in the understanding of his culture. However, he was also compassionate and loving, and so really what we see taking place here is an act of civil disobedience. Jesus knew just what he was doing. He was refusing to adhere to a law and a practice that was more harmful than helpful to this woman. And in turn, Jesus is freeing us to also make the decision to resist what is given to us. Through an act of healing, he disrupts the status quo and gives permission for us as liberation seekers to take a stand against normative oppressive measures. Jesus is showing us that we have the ability to do more than restore, but to reimagine what our sacred spaces look like. Jesus is showing us a way that confronts the expected. And was this not the work of our dearly departed sister, Rachel Held Evans? As she refused to let the message of Jesus and the work of church to be co-opted by those drunk with the wine of the world. Rather than cancel Jesus and the church, she led a rebellious mission against evangelical norms. And I want to put forth for your consideration that the marathon continues because we need to be people of confrontation. A confrontation that, if I had more time, is not only reserved for institutions, but also some personal confrontations as well. Especially those of us of privilege because of what the norm, of how the norm how we're able to benefit from the norm. And that's the reason why privilege is so tricky, because oftentimes it goes unnoticed because we have accepted the norm. And as a result, little confrontation takes place because we don't want to confront what benefits us. Resisting the norms means resisting how we have been fashioned and shaped by the norm. And the good news, as human beings, we have the ability to look inward and confront some of the norms we have consciously or subconsciously upholded and accepted. But this morning, I want to focus on what I believe is a clarion call to go beyond norms in our church spaces. And I want us to wrestle together out loud because, beloved, I must admit that I cringe when I hear the solution-oriented statement for the problems in this world is that we have to get people back in the church. Because I then wonder, what church are we bringing people back to? A sacred space or a stifling, unsafe space? And I just want to put forth for your consideration that it's okay to declare that I'm tired of this church, or that I don't like the church in this moment, but because it begs the question, what are the things that we must confront to have a church that we like? What I realize is that one is that we need liberation to be prioritized over law. As I just mentioned, this woman is liberated from a condition that had limited her abilities. A condition so bad that it left her bent over for 18 years and dependent on the help of others for healing. But rather than celebrating the fact that this woman was now healed, all the Pharisees could focus their attention on was the fact it was the Sabbath. And Jesus was breaking this Sabbath. Yeah, let that sink in. You heard that right, my brothers and my sisters. Jesus was in a church healing and liberating, but the church leaders were upset over the healing because it was done at the wrong time. As if there is a wrong time for freedom and for healing. Healing is taking place, but church leaders are upset. Church leaders are mad, and it's in this moment. While not in the biblical record, I believe it's right here that Jesus says to himself, I'm tired of this church. As he says to them, you hypocrites. And this is not a response of one who is happy with the current state of the synagogue, but one who is saying to them, we've just seen the best of what the church can offer. A woman was just healed in this space, but y'all are mad. What a sad day it is when we find ourselves angry at healing because it wasn't done in the time that we wanted, in the time that we expected. However, can we not diagnose that same problem in our modern day churches? Churches whose focus are on who is following law rather than who is being liberated. It's a problem that we live in a nation where people are suffering under racism, sexism, and homophobia, yet some churches will remain silent regarding those injustices. Instead, be concerned about who is following the Ten Commandments to a T, who has the best church attendance, who is most in line with the dogma and the doctrine of the church. What kind of church world are we in when we could care less about transforming systems of injustice? People who care more about the slavery to sin, but not the sin of slavery. Our churches are not to be spaces where we are keeping track of who is following the correct rules, but a space that is healing and helping persons live whole lives. But as long as we put traditions and law over healing and helping, the dying words of many churches will be, we have never done it this way before. Or we've always done it like this. And this is exactly how the leaders behave in verse 14. But the leader of the synagogue, angry because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, there were 6 days on which to work, which you could come in and have work. Come on those days and be cured and not on the Sabbath day. And the reality is that those in power care little about the law. It's about who they can control under the law. They could care less about the law, because if you pay attention to this verse, notice he doesn't direct his response to Jesus. He directs it to the crowd. Because it was the crowd that he was concerned about the most. The idea that some teacher was exhibiting his own power to empower the crowd angered them because they felt they would lose control over the minds and the hearts of the people. And so he wanted to regain control because he knew that they would begin to see the possibility outside of what they have been domesticated to believe. But our churches cannot be places of hegemonic control, but harmony. I don't like that church. It's what Jesus is declaring in this moment. But what Jesus also shows us is that we must be able to see God in the face of the other. It is a philosopher, Emmanuel Levinas, who once remarked, we see God in the face of the other. And I would suggest to us that in this moment, Jesus doesn't just see what's limiting her, but he sees what's divine in her. Yes, that's right. He doesn't see limitation, he sees liberation. Yes. And I believe Jesus here is teaching us the theology of encountering people. Yes. Helping us to see and understand that God is in those that we are surrounded by. And we have got to get to a place where we see the divinity in everyone. And is this not what Jesus does? As he sees this woman in the midst of a crowd, he calls her out. All of these people in the crowd, he chooses to call her out and help her. And mind you, this is in the middle of a church service. This is on a Sabbath. So for all intents and purposes, this is an inconvenient time. But censoring one who has been accustomed to being looked over and ignored never has a proper time. Jesus sees her. Because Jesus' theology, Jesus' way of living was other-centered. Jesus' way of living is focused on those who have been marginalized by society. It's concerned about the thirsty, the hungry, the oppressed, the downtrodden, the disinherited. Jesus' encounters were inclusive. She was being ignored in a place that should have served as her healing. But not only does this confrontation push us to see the divine in the other, I believe it also pushes us to see demonic ways. Because I believe this is what prompts Jesus to do what he does. He sees the evil that's being promoted in this moment. And he knew that evil agendas deserve confrontations, and so he does just that. And brothers and sisters, our church spaces must follow the lead of Jesus. We must be spaces that are willing to confront evils, willing to speak truth to power, willing to stand up for justice, willing to confront evil. So must not only we be able to look into the faces of other people and see the divine in other people, but we also must train our eyes to see the evil in this world and not be silent and complicit with it, but to be able to stand up and confront all that's going on. And so that's why we see this ministry of confrontation through Jesus, because Jesus sees divinity and he sees evil trying to obstruct it. And if we are going to be a great church, we need to be spaces that see divinity and get rid of evil. But finally, because I know some of you may be ready to head to brunch, the last part that I've recognized as I'm wrestling with this text, that our churches need to go beyond words, to go beyond language, to prepare to leave this sacred space. I want to invite us to consider just that, this idea of space. Because really at the core of this story is the utilization of our space. Jesus in this moment decides that this space and this opportunity would be to create possibilities for the divinity that we see each other, see in each other, and confronting evil in these spaces. Jesus knew in this moment what he could bring to this space. He understood the sacredness was not in the altar or the stained glass window. It was not in the crosses, but he understood the sacredness of the space that people could come and encounter God. An encounter that I believe he knew was not just to be invoked by word only, but through loving actions. Jesus, in this synagogue, in this space, with his opportunity, chose not to name it and claim it. He chose not to equate God with material blessings. He chose not to discuss who would be going to heaven or hell. He chose not to speak at all. He recognized that he could preach sermons and use words when necessary. This space was word becoming flesh. This space was liminal. This space was verb. This space was action. This was Jesus embodying good news. And so as we see the end of this text, we see that the people are delighted. In verse 17, it says that they were delighted with all the wonderful things that he was doing. They weren't delighted over the wonderful things that he was saying. And Jesus said some wonderful things. They weren't standing up in this moment praising God because of an amazing sermon that just happened. But they stood up praising God because Jesus healed a woman. Jesus did something in this moment, and the reason that I focus on this is perhaps sometimes our church spaces become so word-oriented that we never get to a point of incarnating the word. But it's a church where words in that we become agents of change that we can be revived by. It's a space where we're able to not only just talk words of hope to people, but to be words of hope. Not to just speak about justice, but to be justice. It's not only about what we say. It's about what we do and really who we be. What does your being say in each space that you walk into? And perhaps we can consider why this is why the depths of slain rapper Nipsey Hussle and Rachel Held Evans rocked us so hard. Many of us we've never met, but yet we found their lives resonating with us. And it's because of how they use their spaces, their platforms, their opportunities. They used them to do the work, in the words of the sainted womanist theologian Katie Cannon. They did the work that their souls must have. And I don't know how long the work will take, but our churches must invest in the work in our spaces. Reverend Elijah, we've got to stay dedicated, because dedication and hard work plus patience, this is dedication to be church spaces that people won't grow tired of. A church that sees people. A church that eradicates man-made boundaries and barriers. Churches that are headlights and not taillights. And as we see at the end of this passage, that when we do the work, eventually the opponents will be defeated. Because a church that we can love, a church that we will not grow tired of, is a church that is dedicated to the work, doing the work of justice, doing the work of being a voice to the voiceless, of being hope to the hopeless. It's about how we enter into spaces. Do we empower spaces, or do we harm people in those spaces? And so that's what I want to leave you with, is that as liberation seekers, as believers, as followers of the way, we are called to confront those things that are trying to oppose this message of liberation, that someday we can all stand up and say how much we love this church and not have to say, I'm tired of this church. Amen.